Hello, everyone, and welcome to HPR. This is Kay Wisher and Honky Magoo again. We're coming to you on Mumble, and we're going to do a part two from our first episode. Tonight's topic is going to be how we use Linux. How you doing tonight, Honky?
Doing really well. Just enjoyed a wonderful Thanksgiving meal.
Same here, and we're doing this show the day after Thanksgiving on a Friday evening, and I had my second round of Thanksgiving tonight for dinner, so you can always count on the leftovers. It's always good the second time around, too.
And hopefully that tryptophan will kick in the middle of the show and we'll be able to make it through.
True, very true. We'll have to keep an eye on that. If I hear you snoring, I'll know to give you a little poke.
What if you do a little horn over this thing?
I'm not sure. I think my son has one of those air horns I can fire up if we need it.
I don't want you to wake up the house.
Well, tonight, or in this episode, we're going to kind of give a brief overview of what we use Linux for, our own homes, our own setups, and to the first topic of discussion would be a basic, file server. And I have two Samba file servers running on my home network. One is running on a Zubuntu install, which basically has all my music and all our family's digital pictures stored on, and it allows multiple access, to all my family members, and we've got quite a bit of digital pictures, got quite a bit of ripped music. On the other machine is where I keep the video, my personal home videos and my ripped DVD content, because that system happens to be my Myth TV system that's connected to my TV. So I've got two actually Samba and NF servers running on both machines. It's serving Samba because I've got Windows PCs, and I use the NFS part for my Linux. I just kind of like NFS better than Samba for Linux. It's a little bit easier to set up. How's your setup, Honky?
Well, mine is just set up for so it's attached to a 1.5 terabyte external USB drive, and I have it set up just basically to share everything. The only thing, I have everything on there for the most part. I keep my wife keeps all of her pictures on a thumb drive, and I try to, any chance that I can get, just plug that thing in and back it up as much as I can. As knowing my luck, one of those days that thing's going to either break or fall apart or get lost or something's going to happen to it. And I want some sort of a backup of it. And there's been several times when I've had to recover my wife's laptop, either from me screwing it up or just from Windows being Windows. So I've had to go in there and I've taken all of her MP3s and iTunes stuff, and I have probably... Actually, I could probably go in there and delete a bunch of that stuff, because I have probably about two full, complete libraries of that backed up on there. And I have it Samba shared just for everything, anything that can go to it. Real quick, with Myth TV on the client side, can you go on to like the music as well? I know there are some people who want to play music over their television and stuff like that. So can it go to both servers?
Yes. From my auxiliary or my main file server that stores all my music, I have a share linked to the main system, the main Myth TV system that's connected to my TV and home stereo. So anytime I want to play my music over my home stereo, I can just... I think Myth TV has a built-in music player, but it's kind of clunky, so I just use Rhythmbox that I installed on that. It's running Zubuntu. I like the Zubuntu for the Myth TV part, because it's easy to get set up and configured. So that's why I run that on both those systems. And so, and then like, if we're not watching, if my wife's at home during the day and she's not watching TV, I can't even remember the name of the app. It's a front end for Pandora. I think it's called PETA. Does that sound familiar?
I'm not sure, but the only time I've ever used Pandora is on my phone.
But this it's in the repos of, you know, in the Ubuntu repositories. And if you got a Pandora account, you can sign into this app with your account credentials, and it pulls in all your stations you have set up, you know, through the website. And you can, and you don't get all the commercials like if you have it playing through the website. So it's a really nice little app.
Awesome. Now, are you running X on your servers?
On the two file servers, yes, because there's no way to set, both these servers are actually MythTV servers also, and there's no way to set up MythTV without a GUI, unfortunately.
Oh yeah, there's no other way to go in there at all. There's no
No, the setup is all GUI based. Now I may be wrong, but I'm sure I would have discovered it by now that if you could do it all command line, but I'm pretty sure you cannot. So you have to have, and on the main system that actually broadcasts live TV, that's running an X server, but, you know, to get the display out of it, of course. And then it's, and it has to, you don't have to, but I run an NVIDIA card because NVIDIA offloads a lot of the video processing to the GPU instead of your CPU. So yeah, you have to have X installed and have a GUI on a MythTV system.
Now, can you set up what you're going to record off of the client, or do you have to go into the server side to set up some of the recordings and stuff?
Well, you can either do it from the graphical, you know, the front end on the TV. You know, you can use your remote and go in and schedule recordings. But the easiest way that I've found to do it is you install a web server that has its own MythTV interface, and I can go in there and look at the channel guide and do all my TV scheduling and through that, you know, from any computer in the house. So it makes it a little bit easier to set up all your recordings and stuff.
Oh, there you go. That's easy. Now, have you ever opened up a port and scheduled some stuff from, I don't know, outside the house somewhere?
Yeah, I have done it in the past. It's not, I don't do it anymore because I'm opening, I think I got other stuff on port 80, but I mean, I could change the default port if I really wanted to, but I don't really have a need for it anymore. When I first started using, I thought it was neat to remote in and show everybody, hey, look, here's my recording schedules and blah, blah, blah. But it's not that important to me anymore to where I need to do that remotely.
Right. And it's only like every once in a while that you ever actually need that. And, you know, if you can have the port open for something you really need, then might as well have it open for what you really need.
Now, there is, I don't know if you know who Dan Fry is from the Tilts program. He and another guy, I think, have written a Android app for MythTV. And I think you can actually set that up to where you can access your stuff externally. And but yet that, you know, that's going to require a port to be open to your router, but you can actually do it over your Android, or they don't have an iPhone app, that's all Android. So you can actually install this Android app to get access to your MythTV system from, you know, anywhere outside of your network also.
Now, have you played with that at all?
I did once, and like I say, I don't really have a need for that to have that kind of access to it. It's the shows I watch. I mean, the scheduling goes out 2 weeks. So, I mean, if I hear about a show coming up, I really don't have an immediate need to get to it until I get home. So I'm just not really, it's just not a big, you know, one of the top priorities on my list of things that I need to have access to from outside my home.
Now, is it just a scheduler, or can you watch things from your MythTV on it?
From what I've heard, you can actually stream off of your from you can stream your recordings. Now, I don't know about live TV, but I know you can stream your recordings through your Android device.
That's pretty cool. I mean, I kind of wish I still had the unlimited data on Verizon, because on my lunch hour, I used to start up a show, and shows that run like an hour long, you know, actually would take all the commercials out, and then it's, you know, 45 minutes, and, you know, that's pretty much my whole lunch hour, and I couldn't watch some show on Netflix. And but, you know, now with the restrictions on my data, I'm not doing that anymore. But that was always fun to do. If I had that ability, I might, you know, try it.
If you like recording TV for later, you know, for later viewing, like I do, I don't ever watch live TV anymore because of Myth TV. It's just so much more convenient for me to watch it when I want to, instead of scheduling it, you know, sit down, and then especially to have to watch commercials. Commercials drive me nuts. So, and Myth TV auto flags commercials and skips commercials while you're watching your recording. So I hardly ever have to, you know, see any commercials anymore.
Well, I've been running a TiVo for some time now, and about the only good thing about the TiVo is the Netflix app. But I can probably get that off my DVD player, and I don't know. It's not a bad idea, and I'm probably at some point should sit down and look at it and see if it's worth it. But I don't know. At the same time, I keep on going back and forth on the same idea of trying to cut the cord as well, but I have a feeling that's going to cause some static in the house with some things that won't play right or won't look as good or won't have all the shows. I don't know. I got to sit down and look at everything.
Yeah, it depends on, you know, how you're getting, you know, how are you getting your TV now? Is it cable or is it over the air?
It's cable.
So cable's is a different beast. Got a letter in the mail from Comcast as my provider, and they have kept their local channels unencrypted, which means I can use a standard store-bought tuner and it will pick up those unencrypted local channels, and I was using those to record off of. Well, they're starting December 12th, they're going to start encrypting everything, which means they're forcing you to rent one of their devices to do the unencryption. So when I heard this got this letter and started thinking, you know, what am I going to do with, because I was using that part of their feed, the unencrypted stuff for local channels, and I purchased a network attached tuner device this week off of eBay for $62. It's got two tuners in it, and you don't even have to open up your computer. You just plug your cable into it, and I'm connecting it to an antenna instead of the cable, and you just connect your coax to it, connect it to your network, connect the power to it, and go into Myth TV, and you add the tuners. And I had it all set up today. I got it today, and within an hour, you know, I had it all set up and configured, and it's recording some shows right now.
Oh, very nice.
But I also, since I still do have cable, because my wife likes it, because she likes some of the premium channels. We don't subscribe to HBO or any of that type of premium channels, but we get the extra, pretty much get all the digital channels. She likes Fox News and some other stations that she can't live without. The same company that makes this network tuner, it's called Silicon Dust is the name of the company. They make a cable card version of this, which I have. So I have two of these network tuners now. One of them has a cable card in it so that I can get it'll do the decrypting of all the stations, and I can still record off of those. I just can't get the HBO, you know, the movie, you know, the paid movie channels and stuff like that.
So are you able to set up a package with Comcast where you have some of the digital other packages but none of the local channels?
No, I mean, they've got different tiers of, you know, they got your basic cable, which you get, like, you know, through channel 2 through 60 or 70 or something like that, and then you pay for the next package and you get a little bit more, and then you can, I mean, you It's got different tiers, and this device, this that takes their, I rent this cable card from them, which I don't have to use their set-top box anymore. And this cable card is really cheap to rent. I mean, it's like $2 or $3 a month, and it does all the decrypting. And it's whatever package I have that comes into this tuner box, I'm able to view live or record from.
Very cool. I actually think I have they had to put a tuner card into my TiVo. I wonder if I can take that out and start playing with it.
If it's a PCI device, I assume.
No, I'm not exactly sure. They said they had to send a tech out to install the thing, and I really didn't see when he put it in, but I can always pull that box around and take a look.
Do you have a cable card for it, for your cable TV system?
I want to say yes.
And I'm not that familiar with TiVos, but if it doesn't plug directly into that tuner and it just plugs into the box, you know, somewhere else, you may or may not be able to use that tuner in another, you know, in a regular PC. I'm not sure.
Right. That's probably true. Oh, well.
But if it is a what's known as ATSC tuner, which is what you can tune in the free digital channels over the air, and it does have Linux support for it, and it's a PCI device, you can plug it into any computer and pick up free digital channels, you know, through an antenna.
That's it. I'm taking it apart tomorrow.
I highly doubt that that thing will work, but I don't know. I mean, I know that I've heard that TiVos do run a version of Linux. Is that correct?
I believe so. I've never actually been able to dive into it. I just heard that it's pretty locked down. I have like one of the older boxes. It was like a TiVo 2 or something like that. That's just been sitting down here that I've never had a chance to do anything with. I figured at the very least, maybe I'd be able to, you know, see if I can wipe out the hard drive on it and try to install something else on it. And hopefully I can find a kernel that would work with it. But I've never got around to doing it.
Yeah, the whole TV tuner and Linux it's kind of, when I first started in it, and it's been years, I think it was the first OS I used with it when I built it's still the same box I'm using, Mint 5 was what the current version was when I first set up Myth TV, so that shows how long I've been involved with Myth TV. It was kind of hard to set up if you had internal tuners, because you had to make sure you had, if the firmware was, if it was not, you know, supported in the kernel, then you had to go out and find the firmware, which the cards I purchased were not included in the kernel. So, you know, I had to go out and find the firmware for them, and you had to put the firmware in the correct place and, you know, in the file system. And I still have to do that too when I reset it, if I wipe the box and start over. But it's now with these network attached tuners, it's so simple. You don't even have to do any of that. You just plug them in and go through the setup. You don't have to do a whole lot of upfront work with them.
Well, that's good. That's probably one of the things that kind of keep me from it. It's just the amount of time I think it's going to take just to get it all set up. But it's one of those things that I've always wanted to. But for right now, I have the TiVo installed, and that's just been working easy. And I've been pretty happy with it. I mean, it's not the greatest thing out there, but like I said, I can get the Netflix on it with Comcast. The Comcast On Demand is just gotten, within like the last year or so, is now supported with TiVo. So that's been actually really nice. It's a nice little system, but you know, it's an extra bill every month, and if I can kind of take that extra bill away, every little bit helps nowadays, you know.
So is there a fee for using the TiVo, not counting your Comcast subscriptions?
Yeah, and don't ask me. I want to say it's like $10-15 a month, something like that. I don't remember anymore. It's been a while since I looked.
Now, with the Myth TV system, if you want to get your TV programming, there's a service you pay for yearly. It's up to, when I first started, it was $20 a year to get the scheduling. Now it's gone up to $25 a year, but that's really very, you know, that's insignificant when you're trying to cut services.
Yeah, $25 a year ain't bad. So we want to move on to move away for a few minutes from the media server side on over to more of the, let's go with OwnCloud. I run an OwnCloud server on my home server, mostly for the purposes of almost the same thing as Samba. I think it's worked out great for file sharing, but it's mostly for file sharing off of my network. There are times when it seems like it's just a hog on my system because I don't use it as often sometimes, and then all of a sudden there'll just be a need for it where I'm off my home network and I need stuff off there, or I need to share some files with somebody. And a lot of times it's just a giant pain to try to share big files with people, that this just makes it so much easier that, you know, just all you have to do is just set up a little share thing, and then you email that little share thing with somebody, and they just go to it. It goes straight to the this one little page that has the link up at the top. It says this has been shared with you, and they click on that, and it starts downloading. It's a beautiful little thing. That, and it's got a nice little calendar app, which I think it's CalDev that it runs off of. Which I wish it ran off of something else that was a little bit more flexible, because I tried to find a application on my phone that ran with CalDev, and I believe I found like maybe one that was like a paid one, but that was really about it. Other than that, I've been very happy with it. I mean, it's a little bit sluggish, and I know you and I have talked about this in the past, about trying to get it so it's trying to, number one, get it to work on a Raspberry Pi, but number two, just try to get it so it's a little bit more snappier. Because I know I've had problems where I've just been sat there and watched it load and load and load on a page. But I've been pretty happy with it, and I know you've been running an OwnCloud as well. What are your opinions on it?
I use it probably not as much as you do now. We were using it a while back as a collaborative tool for a podcast we were involved with. It worked out real well. I find the same thing. It's sluggish at times, but it's very similar to having your own Dropbox is what I like about it. It's free. In fact, what I'm doing now with mine is I've installed the OwnCloud client on one of my PCs at the garage server, the main file server, and I have it. I've just, when I installed Dropbox, I just set Dropbox to, have you used the OwnCloud client on any of your PCs?
I have not. I've only used the website.
Well, the OwnCloud client is the whole OwnCloud server and client is very, I mean, it acts and behaves the same way as Dropbox does. You set up this client, you put in the address to your OwnCloud server and your credential names and whatever, and it sets up an OwnCloud folder in your home directory, and any files you put in there, it automatically uploads them and keeps them synced to the server. So what I've done on this one on the server that stays on all the time is I installed the OwnCloud client first, and then installed Dropbox, and I just moved my, you can tell the in the OwnCloud or the Dropbox client to where you want to put your Dropbox folder. So I just put it inside the OwnCloud folder so that it's continually getting synced to my OwnCloud server, just in case, you know, Dropbox is a free service. You know what they say about free services. One day they're going to go away, maybe.
Always possible.
And then like you say, anytime you got a file you want to share with somebody, it's real simple to right click and send somebody an email link, just like you can in Dropbox. I like the calendar is nice. It's not as full featured as what you'd want it to be, but it's very useful. You can set up that calendar, and you can get the link for it. You can actually in any calendar application, like on Thunderbird, has a Lightning add-on. It's a
calendar.
It's a calendaring app add-on for Thunderbird, and you can put that link in there from your own cloud server, and it will say, you know, synchronize with Thunderbird. If you change the calendar in Thunderbird, it'll link it up and it'll sync it up to your own cloud server also. So it works, you know, bidirectionally. So, I mean, it's got its purposes. So if you don't like the calendaring interface of the own cloud interface, you know, the web GUI, you can find a calendar application to link to it that has maybe more features.
And one of it actually also has the ability to put in pictures, to be able to view pictures on it and stuff like that. And that's another one of the things that either I gotta do better. I know I have to go in there and do a much better job of organizing my pictures, because it'll show like a big screen of all of the photos and show like little samples of them, and you can do like a little slideshow in there with them. But it's number one, I gotta organize them better so it's not loading up so many things at one time. But it's also, I think, just because OwnCloud is a little bit slow. And I mean, if I can get that to work a little bit better. And we were talking about OwnCloud by default runs off of an Apache server, and we had looked at the idea of running on an Nginx. And I think one of these days I'm gonna probably throw Nginx onto this thing as well and see if I can just link OwnCloud up to it, just to see if I can get it running a little bit snappier. It has so much potential for so many cool things. Like, there's also add-ons for like a music player, and I want to say for different type of video files, there's also an add-on that you can watch videos through it and stuff. There's lots of cool add-ons, and from what I've heard, that they're working on it more and more and more. I need to get it so it just runs a little bit smoother. And maybe it's my hardware. I just need to upgrade my hardware for what I'm doing.
Yeah, I don't know what the answer is, whether it's, you know, like I say, I'm running, if it's on your own hardware, whether you need, you know, what the minimum requirements are for this, whether Nginx would help. I know on I just reinstalled OwnCloud on a box, redid another server I've got that houses the OwnCloud, and instead of putting MySQL on, I put MariaDB, but I don't think that, I'm pretty sure that that's not going to give me any, I haven't noticed any performance difference, so I think MariaDB is just a fork of MySQL, so it's probably got the same performance. I haven't noticed any increases in speed, so I don't know what the answer is to make it a little bit snappier. I mean talking, when I'm using the web interface on my local network, it's still sluggish.
Yeah, I find that too. And I we've been talking about it back and forth for a while now, and I keep on looking for the possibility of different types of databases, and unfortunately I'm not that smart when it comes to databases. But they had I was looking at possibly doing the SQLite or whatever. That might be a little bit easier, but at the same time, it said something about only being able to have one user, which for me wouldn't be that big of a deal, because normally, you know, I'm the only guy who uses it for the most part. So it wouldn't, that I don't think that would matter, but I'm willing to try anything at this point, but I just got to get around to probably wiping it out and starting over again, or doing it on another box.
So do you have other accounts on there, or is just you by yourself?
It's just me by myself. I mean, I've added other accounts before. Like a friend of mine was trying to do her husband's birthday was coming up, and I was going to do a video montage to her husband type of a deal for his birthday. And she was just uploading. I had set up an account so she can just sit there and upload a bunch of movies onto little like 5-second videos that she took with her phone, and whatever music she wanted to put on it, and a bunch of pictures and stuff. So I had set up an account for that, and I had set up like a very general guest account that I wanted it for like my mother or my family to be able to go on to and see pictures of my daughter. And that was the big thing with me, is just trying to just show them how to use that and show to show them that site. And it just, it took forever to load up any of the pictures and stuff. And that's where I kind of went, you know, maybe I need to do a much better job of organizing this stuff so it doesn't take, you know, 3 hours just to load up the page. And then, you know, you just hit on one picture and all of a sudden it just sit there and lags forever to load up that picture. And then it lags forever to go back to the giant thing of thumbnails, or, you know, just a little bit snappier. And maybe maybe that's not right, the right tool for that. And maybe I need to find something else to be able to show off pictures. And I don't know, but it's a real nice program that just seems like it's almost there, you know?
Yeah, and they're continuously making improvements to it. They're always adding features. And now, what type of OS are you running this on?
Ubuntu 1204 LTS.
I just switched mine over to Debian. This box that houses this own cloud over to Debian, and I don't notice any speed increases there either. So I'm pretty sure it's, you know, related to the internals of own cloud. I'm really interested in the next time I have to. I didn't have time to do it this time this week. To try Nginx and see if that's the bottleneck.
Now, how do you install OwnCloud? Because I know there's like several different ways to do it. I think I usually just wind up downloading the file and unzipping it. But I know they also have like a I went on there and last time I installed, they had a like almost like a web-based thing to be able to install it, where you just download this one little thing and it's supposed to walk you through it. On as long as everything on the LAMP stack has you give it access, you can just kind of walk through the install and it'll set everything up through like almost like a little web GUI type of a thing.
I haven't tried that feature. I know what you're talking about. I've seen that, but what I always do is I just add the repos to Ubuntu, or just, you know, here recently, you know, Debian. It gives you I think on their website it gives the Linux installers, and it if you follow the other links to and it lists all the how to add it to all these, you know, all the other popular distros. But you can just add something to your sources file to where you can just continually get automatic updates when you do your normal updates. Also, it may be a version, you know, like a point version behind what the latest is, where if you just downloaded, you know, the tar file and did like you're saying, just, you know, unzipped it into the var www folder and went that route. But I like just doing it through a repo. That way it's getting its updates automatically, and then when you do the, you know, do the install, it automatically pulls in all the dependencies and everything.
See, that's probably the best way to go. And if you're going from a different repo, then I'm going to have to ask you to send me what that repo link was. Because on Ubuntu 12.04, it's actually in their just standard repo. I did an apt-get install the first time I installed it. But it was, like you said, it was like, but like this time it was like several versions behind. And one of the things that I liked about it was that I can hook it up to the to be able to set up which drive it was going to, and in the system there was a much easier way to be able to do it, and that didn't come out exactly the way I wanted to. But I have I told you how I have the Samba shared directory, the 1.5 terabyte that's hooked up to it, and it's Samba shared. I wanted to get that set up on OwnCloud, so that's basically just the only place where I'm going to dump files is in that Samba share. And to do that in the later versions was very simple. You just go in there and they had like it was part of the whole settings page where you just added that directory in there and it was just automatically added into it. While the older versions, you had to go into some config file, and that drove me absolutely nuts because I sat there and played with that and got absolutely nowhere. So I wound up downloading it and the latest version and installing it that way. If I can get it from repos, like you're saying, that's the best way to go. I mean, it'll automatically update. I don't think mine's been updated in forever.
Yeah, and then like if you do the get the tar file and unzip it, then you have to can do the, you know, make sure you keep it updated yourself if you want to get, you know, when the next release comes out, you have to kind of jump through some hoops to get the new release. And but on the OnCloud, the main OnCloud.org site, it's where you get to the installer you're talking about. There's a link that has all the main distros, and it gives you, you know, it's got CentOS, Debian, Fedora, OpenSUSE, Red Hat, SLES, OpenSUSE, and Ubuntu. If you just click on the link, you know, your operating system, it gives you instructions on how to add the repos so that you can, you know, get the continuous updates.
Cool. Now I just got to find the time to do it.
And I think, you know, I'm not sure whether you can add that on now if you've done it another way. I'm pretty sure you could. I don't think it's going to break anything too hard.
About the only thing I'm worried about breaking on the system is the Samba. Other than that, the rest of this can probably go. I mean, the only other thing I have on here is the Plex server that I've been playing around with. I had put that on there to because I wanted to play around with RasPlex, which is a Plex client for the Raspberry Pi that I didn't have much luck playing around with. But I'd lose the Plex. Well, now that I'm not using it for the Raspberry Pi, what's it called? My PS3 has Plex, and I've been using my PS3 in my living room because it has Netflix on it. So I'd watch Netflix, and then I can also go to the Plex side and watch the stuff that I've ripped my movies from. And I lose that. And recently I installed, just for the hell of it, ELGG, which is a... it's kind of a blogging social media site that I kind of downloaded and wanted to play with for the hell of it. And I'm probably going to wind up wiping that out because I have no reason for it. I just, you know, one of those things to try and do it just to say that you can try and do it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't hurt anything to try something out. And like you say, you can always, if it's some type of web, you know, like runs off of a web server, you can pretty much just, you know, wipe out that folder. It puts under the root of the www folder, and maybe delete some configuration files, and you can play around with the next thing you want to play around with.
Yeah, like I actually installed on my server before I wiped it out. I had Joomla installed on it, which is a content management system. And after playing around with that for a little while, I had downloaded a bunch of like dollar books from the Kindle store, and I was playing and learned a bunch of stuff on how to actually get some stuff moving on that. But after a while, I just sat there and went, I have absolutely no purpose for a website. So it just sat there and sat there and sat there until I wiped the whole system out, and now I don't have it anymore.
Yeah, I mean, web develop, you know, websites, if you don't, like you say, if you don't have a need for it, if you don't have a business, if you don't need to get your name out there and interact with customers or the public, and there's really not a whole lot of, I mean, unless you just want to play around with it on your, you know, on your home network.
Yeah, and with the ELGG, I was kind of playing around with the idea in my head, the same idea as I was thinking about or talking about a minute ago with the OwnCloud, just as kind of a place where I can set up be able to show off all the pictures and stuff like that, and then try to incorporate like maybe a calendar app and have it as there for the probably just more for the family, that the family can, you know, kind of go into go onto the site, and they can go in there and get updates on the calendar and what's going on, pictures, a lot of pictures and stuff like that. But you know, and maybe if I can use get the calendar working for the whole house, so we can, you know, get my whole house on the one solid calendar. But I don't think I don't think it's going to do what I want it to do. So I think I'm just going to wind up wiping it out.
What popular service do you compare this ELG to?
I'm going to have to go with I don't know. ELGG is kind of it's a social media blogging type. It's like regular blogging. Like you can have like a full, like one person could have like a full blogging site with like microblogging, and with I actually installed a chat service to it. It's almost like a little IRC system. That's pretty much it. And I was thinking about this the other day, and I'm just gonna throw this out there. If you think about it, what's the difference between a blogging social media site and a forum? The only thing I can come up with that the difference is one is referenced by the subject matter, the other one is referenced more on the lines of the people.
True. I don't do much blogging, and I don't even participate that much on Google+. I just basically read it. But yeah, I don't have much of a need for blogging or telling people about my daily goings on.
Exactly. And that's why I'm not on too many social media. And I do the same thing with Google+. I got it on my phone for the most part, and I turn it on and I sit there and I flick through what other people have written. And a lot of times you got to subscribe to the right people and just get the good information and go through that. I don't really want to know about people's days and stuff like that either. But that's kind of like what I was thinking. If you can kind of incorporate the same idea of blogging and forums, I think it would be an interesting experiment. But I don't know. That'd be one of those projects that I'd sit there and play with and then find absolutely no use for, and then it just gets thrown away anyways.
I guess if you was going to set it up for, I mean, if your family, an extended family, was off, out of state or whatever, or if there was a way to where you could set it up to where you could just be a family related site, then I think that would be nice.
Yeah, it might be pretty cool. But like I said, I have a feeling it's just not going to do what I want it to do. If I do that, I wish I could search around and see if I can find like a fantasy football plugin for it, and I don't know, stuff like that. That'd be kind of cool. My family does fantasy football. That's why.
Ow, that's something else I'm not into, is the fantasy stuff like that.
Are you just not into like football and sports, or are you just not into the fantasy?
Oh, I like sports. I like watching my local teams here, professional, the NBA and NFL, and the college. I like college sports too. I love college football and basketball. But as far as doing, what I'm afraid of is if I tried doing a fantasy league of some sort, I'd get hooked. And it's like gaming. That's why I never started gaming. I think I'd just go whole hog into it and become a hermit.
Well, I don't know. I've been doing it for a while. This is my second year doing it, and I find that the only thing I do is most of the week I just kind of sit down. I take like one day where I sit down and look at my team. I go, okay, who's still playing? Who's injured? And then I go through and they do like projected points, and I go, all right. And I kind of stack my list on who I think is going to be best with the projected points. And then I just kind of walk away from it. And then like every Sunday, good Lord, every Sunday I'm looking at it like every couple of minutes just to see who, who's getting me points, who's not getting me points. But besides that, it just kind of sits there. That's the one thing about football, is you have pretty much like, besides now when they're doing the Thursday night games, and the Mondays and Thursdays, you're pretty much just got that Sunday, and that's the only time that you really got to pay attention to football. Yeah, or the NFL at least.
Right.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, you don't have as many games going on as like a baseball or football or basketball.
Right. And that's, in my opinion, that's one of the downsides to those sports. Is, I mean, I love hockey, but I have a hard time watching a regular season game of hockey just because it takes so long for the season to go by. And, the one thing with football is you lose one game and it's completely detrimental to the entire season. You lose one game of hockey and it's not that big of a deal. And I think we went completely off the rails from our talking about our servers.
Yes. Another server type application I run on, and this is only because I was a big Google Reader user for my RSS feeds. Do you use any type of RSS? Do you get into RSS feeds of any type?
The only ones I do is for my podcatching. And I only do my podcatching on my phone for the most part. And right now I'm using an app called Beyond Pod, which I'm not terribly happy with, but I'm just kind of, you hit that point where you have everything loaded into it and you're just like, whatever. And that, yeah, I've used it a little bit some news, but not by much. I'm not big on news. I don't know.
Yeah. I only had maybe 12 feeds that I watched, and they were all technology related, just to keep up on what's going on, you know, with technology news. And there were some Linux feeds that you can get that are real interesting. But anyway, I was a, like I said, Google Reader was a free service, and like some, you know, free services, they took that away. And so I'd started researching and hearing about all these, you know, Google Reader replacements that were coming around. And there's this free project. It's called Tiny RSS. And it's kind of like OwnCloud. You add a repo on, you know, Ubuntu or a Debian or, you know, whichever distro of a machine you're running. And it's basically a web server, and you just go through a quick setup, you know, through a web GUI. Once you log in, once the software is installed, you just log into it through a web browser, and you can import feeds from another, you know, if you get, there's a standard XML format that you can, that I was able to get out of my Google, you know, from my Google account. So I was able to import that in to it, and I've got it opened up to the outside so that I can access it from work when I want to. And It works really nice. It's just a nice little server if you're into, you know, RSS feeds. It's a very nice little application.
Very cool. So you're able to download a podcast through the RSS and then listen to it from off your site through there, or streaming through there?
I imagine you could if you wanted to. I don't do that. I use a dedicated podcatcher, and I don't use the web, this tiny TTRS server, to do my podcatching. I use a standalone, well, a dedicated application on my home desk, you know, on my desktop system. To it goes out nightly with a cron job, and goes out and downloads all my podcasts nightly.
Now, when you download your podcast, do you pretty much just listen to them on your computer, or do you upload them then to like some sort of an MP3 player or like your phone?
About once or twice a week, I just connect my phone to my computer that the podcatcher's on, and I just do a rsync to the phone, to the the SD card, and just do that once or twice a week when I'm running low. And the podcatcher I use is called Podgit, and it's available in the repos of Ubuntu and Debian. And it's not a GUI program. It's got two configuration files in it that you go in and configure the way you want it to download your file. You set up one file that gives all your RSS feeds for your podcast, and the other file is more for how the program behaves, how often you go out and get the files, and, you know, it creates, you can choose to create a playlist of each time it downloads. So I have it creating a playlist after every night's download. It creates a playlist, and I like that because I kind of like to listen to my podcast in chronological order. So each day I have a playlist made. It's generated automatically for each night's download. So I just load, when I rsync the folder from my computer to my phone, the playlist are in that folder, and I just look at my player on my Android phone and play the playlist in chronological order. So I get all my, I don't have to worry about hearing news that's, you know, out of order. I kind of get a chronological order of any news and tidbits going on.
Very cool. So you just use the standard player on your Android phone and just use and then just have it play the playlist?
Yeah, I think it's called, the free player I use is called Rocket Player. I think it was kind of a replacement for the free one that came through Android, but that's the one I'm using. It's called Rocket Player.
That's pretty cool.
Well, even before my other droid, the older droid I had, my first smartphone, the stock Android player would, any of these media players will do playlists, so you can take advantage of that on about anything. I mean, even one of the first MP3 players I had would do playlists.
Right. So what else are you running?
Well, while you mention it, we mentioned we were at the start of the show that we were recording on a Mumble server. Well, this Murmur is the server portion of Mumble. Mumble is the client, which is what we're using to talk to each other with. But the Murmur server is actually running on a Raspberry Pi here at my house. And that's what we've connected to the last two episodes. And we're actually using that to record the shows that we're putting out for HBR here.
Very cool. And how do you go about configuring this thing?
Well, we'll have a nice link for the show notes, but if you just type in your Google search, how to Mumble, you'll come to a SourceForge page. That was the first hit I got, and it's very simple. It's the Murmur server is in Debian and Ubuntu repos. You install it, you know, the usual way, apt-get, and it's got a few basic settings in a config file. You know, you start the server with, you know, the etsy init.d command, and you're gold. I mean, you just do, like, say, a simple text file configuration, and if you open up I have to open up a port out of my router, of course, to get for you to come into it, but it's you know, it's about a 15 minute install and get up and going, and you could be talking to people.
Oh, that's awesome. Now, is there any special way to be able to configure rooms and stuff like that, or can you just do that from a config file?
Part of the installation in the terminal, it'll pop up and give you where you have to set up an admin user. And if you connect through the Mumble client as that admin user, then you get extra features in the Mumble interface that you and I both know, you know, the Mumble client feature. Then you can go in there and set up your rooms if you want to. Or there's an add-on application. It's called Mumble-Django, and it's basically a web GUI interface to your Mumble, your Murmur server that you can go in and use to configure rooms and user permissions and whatever, what have you. I've used it a few times, but it's really just as easy to log in to with the Mumble client with that admin account that you set up during install and just configure all the rooms there. It's not that difficult to do.
Very cool. I always thought about setting one up, but then again, I've mostly just been recording with you, and between that and the Linux Basics OpenSpeak server, that's pretty much what most people use.
Yeah, the reason I did my own was because I think one time we were trying, I don't know if it was you were present or not, but we were trying to do a podcast and on the, you know, the OpenSpeak, the Linux Basic server, well, you know, anybody can just jump into a room. We got interrupted, and this just kind of gives a little privacy if you're doing, now, not to say that the Linux Basic server is, you know, crowded and busy all the time. I mean, probably 99% of the time you could go in and record a show, not have any problems, but it was just that one time that we got interrupted by somebody that just jumped in and started blabbing. And so I just wanted a little server so that I could, you know, if I needed to talk to somebody in private, I just give the information to who I want.
Right. That makes sense. I mean, there are times where, especially on a Friday night, just because Friday night's just open night, and if we don't have, the credentials to be able to set up a private room or something like that, then yeah, it's a big help just to have our own.
And just on this same Pi, I also have an Icecast server running. Now, you got to, well, I know everybody's probably familiar with the Pi, but this just blows me away what you can do with this little device. This is actually running two server applications, the Murmur server and Icecast, which is basically a way to where you can stream, you can broadcast a audio stream out to the internet with it. And I first discovered it probably a little more than a year ago. You know, last year when the HPR show decided they were going to do a 24-hour, I think they did a 12-hour show the year before that, back in 2011 and 12, and then last year they decided to go 24-hour. So I decided to provide some to help out with that, and I discovered Icecast for for streaming, you know, live audio, it can be, you can play music, whatever audio feed is coming out of your sound card, you can actually broadcast to the internet this way. And it, like the Murmur server, it's very simple setup. There's a link, and there will be a link in the show notes, How to Forge. I just love that site. I don't know if you, are you familiar with How to Forge?
I think so. I don't know. Anytime I run into a problem, I just do a search and wherever it takes me. And I think it's taken me a How to Forge several times, but I go to wherever it takes me and then just kind of go through there and see where, you know, see where I go. I kind of hop around.
Right. But usually 90% of the time, if you type in how to with some type of subject for Linux, usually you're going to run into a SourceForge page or a How to Forge page. And they just, it's so useful for setting up services like this. And it, like I say, you go to that site and it's like a 15, like it's another 15 minute install and config, and you can be pumping your own radio station out to the internet if you'd like, as long as you have an open port, you know, through your firewall.
And that's awesome. Now, did you take part in the last, the 24 hour HPR?
Yes. I was actually pumping the MP3 feed through Mumble out to an Icecast server I had set up at my work. Let's keep that on the down low because they don't know about it. But I've got an Icecast server running off our internet feed there because we got more bandwidth. And plus it was, you know, during the time that school was out of session, so it wasn't that big. And even if you had, the Icecast, the biggest demand on Icecast and streaming is your bandwidth going up. So, because the people drawing off of the feed is feeding off your uplink. So if you don't have a very good uplink, you're going to be limited. So like we did some, I was going to do it from here at home, but I only have like a 4 megabit up, and with the help of the Altcast Planet IRC, I put out a call to do a test. I could only handle like 35 connections through my home internet, you know, feed before it would start breaking down. So it's all dependent on your upload speed. So that's why I set one up on a Debian server at work. And so I was pumping the MP3 port. We had two people pumping. One was doing an AUG feed, and I was doing the MP3 feed. So I was pumping it to the first Icecast server at my work location, and then we had another, and then we had a mirror off of each one of those. So we had like two people with clients just pumping the streams, the audio out to the two main Icecast servers, and then they had off of each one of those, they had an Icecast relay. So we had actually four Icecast servers running to where it would spread the load, and if one happened to go down, you'd have another one for a failover. So it was a pretty simple setup, really. It only took, you know, us getting together on IRC, you know, a few times, and then meeting on Mumble maybe once to get all of our ducks in a row. And we're getting ready to have a meeting tomorrow after the HPR community news on Saturday to meet with whoever's going to be providing the servers this year. So it's kind of fun to help set that up and be a part of it.
That's very cool. Now, are you broadcasting or helping broadcast anybody now, or?
Well, right now I've volunteered my Pi streamer. I call it the PiCast, the Mintcast podcast, and the Sunday Morning Linux podcast are using my Pi for their live streaming. So if you go to their websites and get the link for the live stream, you're actually connecting to my Raspberry Pi that we're actually on right now, and you can listen to their live broadcast.
That's very cool.
It's just incredible, this little Pi, and it doesn't take much system resources for these two. I mean, I'm sure we could be doing, right now, one of those podcasts could be streaming right now while we're doing our recording here, since, you know, the recording's not being done on the Pi, it's doing on your local machine, but And it wouldn't bog it down because I've watched the load on the Pi while they're streaming to it, and they get maybe, I think the most listeners I seen at one time was like 12, and that Pi just it doesn't even hardly even know it's going on. I mean, it's now I was watching my internet feed through my router, and now that was going up, but as far as the load on the Pi, there was nothing. I mean, it's just like it wasn't even running at all.
I know there was some talk last year about how many people that they were worried about crashing the OpenSpeak server with too many people or upping it so that they thought that it can only hold maybe about 50 at a time. Would you ever think about how many people it might actually take that the Pi could take on this?
I'm not sh I think as far as like I say, I think as far as the system and load, it could handle 100 people, but I think it's going to be my bandwidth since I'm limited on my home connection. I think it would be the bandwidth that would actually bring it down and not the overload of the system.
Yeah, so it's not the hardware itself, it's just the connection.
Right. And like every year when we do this, Jay Newsteader, who's the owner and operator of the OpenSpeak Linux Basic server, he has to go in and change. I think he ups the number of connections that he can have on that server for, that 24-hour period, and I think it cost him very little money to do that. But it's hosted, of course, on a dedicated VPS server, so it's got. I'm not sure what the bandwidth he has to it, but it's been more than enough. I think last year at the peak we seen close to 100 people connected at one time at the peak.
Really?
Yeah, there was close to 100 connections. Now, not everybody was talking at once, of course. You can only talk one person at a time, but and that's something else that is bandwidth dependent is when you're actually speaking. So I mean, you weren't. If you have one person speaking, that's not a lot of bandwidth, just one audio stream. But so I mean, and that server, it didn't have any problems with the. I'm almost pretty sure. I know it was 80 to 100 connections at one time.
That's freaking awesome. I wish I was on during that time. The only time when I was on, I think I only saw maybe about, I almost want to say I saw like 25 on at a time. And once again, it wasn't everybody talking, but you do run into like five people trying to talk at the same time, trying to make a comment about something. And then you also have like there's always the possibility of lag. So you have a lot of people that, they'll start talking and start falling on top of each other.
Yeah, and like I know when I was monitor, you know, I was when I was there monitoring everything and had the client pulled up. You know how the user list is on the right-hand side of the interface on my full-screen monitor. At one time, you had a scroll bar because I had so many users that you had to use the scroll bar to see the whole list of users. So that's it depends on your screen resolution, of course, also. But under normal, screen resolution, I couldn't see the whole list of people connected without scrolling up and down. And I've never, that's the only time I ever see that many people on a mobile server, of course.
That's absolutely awesome. I don't know who first came up with this idea, but it was, I thought it was a great idea. And everything that's said during that 24 hours isn't necessarily pure gold, but I sat there and I listened to every last minute that was recorded. It was great.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I guess I'll mention this little app I was using for that. There's an application. It's called BUT, and don't everybody laugh at once, but that stands for Broadcast Using This Tool, and it's not included in any of the repositories of Ubuntu or Debian. You have to download it and extract it and do a config, do the make install type app, install of it, but it's very simple to install, and it does exactly what it says. You use it to push your whatever's coming out of your sound card out to an Icecast server, and so that's a neat little app.
That's cool. Do you think they came up with the acronym first or the name?
I'm not sure, but it's every time I mention that, people chuckle. So it's BUTT. That's what it stands for. Broadcast using this tool, and it does exactly what it says. It's a little GUI app, and it's pretty easy to configure to start pushing you a stream out.
Very cool. Do you have anything else that you use on your servers?
Well, not really. Just file sharing, Myth TV, pushing, you know, doing recording TV, live watching TV, the own cloud, tiny RSS, Mumble, Icecast. I think I've mentioned it up, everything I can think of.
All right, so you have one of your Raspberry Pis running both the Icecast and Mumble servers. Do you have any other Raspberry Pis, and what are they doing?
I've got two, and the other one I just basically play around with. I tried running OwnCloud off of it, but if you think it runs slow on a regular PC, it's intolerable on a Pi, and I wish it wasn't so, because the Pi would be a perfect, you know, application, perfect device for a small cloud-based server. And I mean, I can barely tolerate it the way it is on the computer I've got now, but I just could not tolerate it on the Pi. Now, it does run the tiny, I have put the tiny RSS on it, and it runs that just fine. But I don't know what it is about OwnCloud. It just makes it so sluggish.
Yeah. With me, the original reason
I bought my Pis was to my son wanted to take advantage of my Myth TV system in his bedroom. So I've done a little reading and research about how you could use a Raspberry Pi to make a little media server that you connect to a TV, and you can access your, well, you know, whatever media you have on your network. So I started out putting RaspBMC on it and got it all working and set up, and it does great for doing your ripped content, your music. It's got a nice interface. If you hook up a remote control to it, it didn't even have to configure anything. It just worked right out of the get-go. The remote control I had laying around, I had a USB receiver with a IR, you know, an IR USB receiver, worked right out of the box. And XBMC has a plug-in for Myth TV to where you can actually connect to your main Myth TV system, to where you could even do live TV. You could watch live TV, and you didn't have to install Myth TV. You just had to get the plug-in and get it installed into XBMC, which I did. And I found that for watching live TV through it was tolerable, but it was very choppy. And I think it has to do with the file format that Myth TV uses. It's an MPEG format, and I even purchased the MPEG codec from the Pi Foundation, and that helped. I mean, that actually made it usable, but any other media I had, like my ripped movies off a DVD, they'd play just fine. And even the recorded stuff from Myth TV would play fine. It was the live TV portion of it that would not function correctly, or it was just undesirable. I mean, it would work, but it wouldn't buffer. It was like it was buffering, you know, pause and skip, and it just wasn't very pleasant to do. But yet the recorded stuff, which was in a different format, like it's straight MPEG, but I can't, maybe this live TV is in a different format that it wouldn't play right because of the codec issue. But everything else worked fine on that. It's a great little front end if you aren't going to connect it to a Myth TV system. I really like the interface of XBMC. It's very intuitive and easy to set up. You can, if you got a little keyboard, a portable keyboard, and a simple little remote you can hook up to it, it makes a nice little media center. What are you using yours for?
Well, I just wanted to ask you, how did like the whole the whole menu system, being able to go around from trying to choose your files and everything else, and going around that whole, how did XBMC run? Did it run pretty smoothly, or was it kind of sluggish? Or anytime I read anything about the XBMC, I hear that it's very sluggish. The RaspBMC, that it's very sluggish, but I don't know what are they talking about, or do you know what they're talking about?
I found the interface to be very responsive, and it was the only thing I found fault with it was, like I said, I was trying to interface with live TV off my Myth TV system. But as far as playing media, ripped media or the recorded media for Myth TV, or your music or your pictures, you know, browsing your picture files, you know, through a Samba Share or whatever, it worked excellent. In fact, I'm thinking about taking that second Pi that's just sitting there, and once I get a a network drop run to my our master bedroom, is putting that on the back of our TV in our bedroom, so I can watch when my wife wants to, when she has control of one of, you know, the main TV, I can go back to the bedroom and watch some movies and stuff that I have on my network.
Because I started, like I was saying before, I had found Rasplex, which was a Plex front end Plex front end. It seemed like it would be like an ideal thing, because the whole idea of Plex, at least as far as I understand, is that it's just basically streaming. So it's just basically streaming off it. The server does all the work and it sends it up. And it was absolutely horrible. And I can't see why, but it was just absolutely horrible. I couldn't get, and I've tried like different formats of ripping. I've had some horrible AVIs that I've had downloaded with that were just they were bad. And then I found some really good rips that I've had done, and it all came out looking horrible, but like a little bit better than the other stuff. And I've tried to rip in my own stuff all sorts of different ways, and nothing looked good on it at all. And to go back to what the whole menu system, they say you're supposed to just kind of go through and let it all cache, and then it's supposed to be smoother. It ran so sluggishly, and I don't know. I had such high hopes for the Rasplex, and it just let me down. And so I was looking online, and like you and I talked before about using the RaspBMC, and I know you said you were impressed with it. And like I said, anything I read, any of the reviews I read just basically said that it was kind of slow and sluggish. And so I found this thing called Xiban. And Xiban is basically the same thing as the RaspBMC, but it's supposed to be like, it's supposed to be the newest, the latest and greatest, you know, the bleeding edge software for everything. And I've been running that, and I don't know what it looks like on a regular RaspBMC, but compared to the Rasplex, I have not been happier. I mean, everything's been looking great. I mean, there's always moments when you kind of got to wait a few minutes for it to kind of, I mean, it's over Wi-Fi anyway, so you got to kind of wait for it to finally fully buffer, and then the picture gets really nice and crisp, and you know, you always have those moments where it's kind of a little bit blocky. But with Xiban, I've been nothing but happy with it, and I'm hoping to play around with it a little bit more and get everything set up, because with XBMC, there's so many different types of skins and stuff that you can set up. Then each skin seems to have like a whole different type of interface to it, so I want to play more with that. And the one thing that I miss about the Rasplex was Rasplex had a lot more channels involved. Like I can get an NBC channel and a lot of the local network channels and stuff like that that I'm not finding with. I know there's, and I gotta, that's another thing I gotta search for a little bit more with is the, there's, I know there's other plugins and other repositories you can set up with the XBMC to be able to run more channels, to get more channels, like I said, the NBC and stuff like that. Other than that, I've run Raspbian, but what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to get a little setup here with a, I bought a portable battery. It's like one of those ones that you're supposed to recharge up your phone afterwards. It's got like two USB power supplies plus a little 12 volt/9 volt out that I'm using for to power up a little 7-inch monitor, and then the Raspberry Pi. I kind of have it as a portable device. So far, my only I need to find a decent container for it. I've been looking around to, I might try to find something like a small pencil box type of a thing. Something, because the little 7-inch monitor I have is kind of chunky, that I got to get something that it'll close with the whole little battery pack plus the Raspberry Pi. And then I'm also stuck with a great deal amount of wire, and I'm not a very good electrician, so I don't have any plans on taking the wire apart and splicing it and putting it all together. So I got to find something that can kind of house all of that stuff and still be in a small container. But I've run it before, and it's, you know, Raspbian MC is just a nice little Raspbian, the Debian version for Raspberry Pi. It's just a fun little distro, and it's half of it is like, as soon as you load it up, it's got like so many things for Python and how to play around with Python, and I thought that was pretty fun too. And I wanted to get that all set up and bring it with me, so I can just sit there on my lunch hour at work and just like screw around with Python type stuff. But yeah, that's pretty much what I do with my Raspberry Pi.
I'm going to have to investigate this Xbian. How do you say that?
I think it's pronounced Xbian.
Yeah, Xbian. Xbian. I'm just getting ready to start downloading the image file now.
It's, like I said, maybe just because coming from the Rasplex, I have been nothing but happy with it. And I've been using the, there's an app for Android that'll run XBMC, where it works over the Wi-Fi. So as long as your Xbian is hooked up to the wireless or to a network, then you can just kind of use that as a remote. But I am liking your idea that you're talking about with you found a USB IR. I might have to look into that.
Yeah, when I first built my Myth TV system, I did all this research on all the hardware I was going to need, and the remotes that were recommended at that time were Microsoft Media Center branded remotes, and with a USB IR receiver, and they're supported in Ubuntu, Zubuntu, whatever, you know, the distro at the time that I was using to put Myth TV on top of, and it was pretty easy setup, you know, through the Myth TV setup to get that remote working. It was already pre-set up. Now I've switched over to a Logitech Harmony, and I was able to actually pass the programming, you know, you set the two remotes in front of each other, and you can actually program the Logitech. You can actually press buttons on the source remote and program right into the Harmony. The Harmony is a really nice device.
Now that's the big expensive one, like the $80 one with a little digital display, isn't it?
Yeah, I think I paid $80 for mine. It's not the color display, it's just a plain. Now, I think they can get now they've got color displays, and they just get crazy.
Yeah, I was actually looking at remotes today, it being Black Friday, and everybody, you know, all the families now are wanting some sort of a list or ideas for Christmas buying. I was looking around at different type of things that I might want, and so I'm sitting there going, well, how can I best optimize my systems here? Because everywhere in my house, I have probably at least 2 to 3 remotes going on. You know, upstairs I have the TiVo remote with the Blu-ray remote. Downstairs I have the PS3 controller that I use. My PS3, by the way, has just, that poor thing hasn't played like any video games since I got it. My brother got it for me probably about, I want to say he got it for me Christmas like 2 years ago, as out of the blue, big freaking gift. Shocked the hell out of me, but the poor thing has just basically been like a media center at this point. It's a Blu-ray player, so it's been the downstairs Blu-ray player, and it's got Netflix on it, and I've been using it for Netflix like crazy, and now that it's also has Plex on it, which I found by accident. I think Plex was just on there by default. It just the PS3 just kind of found that there was a Plex server on there and installed everything on its own, because I was just like scrolling through about ready to play a DVD and saw this thing, went, hey, what the heck is this? And it's Plex. Oh, look at there. There's all my movies. So yeah, but I was looking around for a decent remotes to connect everything together. And if I can, and I found one that to be able to connect to the PS3 is a Bluetooth way. And so I was thinking about getting one that was for just like downstairs that was meant for the PS3 and the cable box. But I didn't was I don't know if I can connect, if I can do the on demand with the cable box. But if the IR, if I can find a little USB IR, that's gonna be freaking cool just for the Pi.
Yeah, they work pretty nice. It's like I say, it's just a when I'm doing the Raspbian MC image install it. I didn't even have to configure anything. You just plugged it in and it worked right out of the box.
That's awesome. Because I know because of the I have the Plex downstairs on the Raspbian MC, I got to move my Xiban up into the bedroom. And the only problem with that is I have two HDMI inputs. One's got the Blu-ray player, the other one's got the TiVo. So I'm going to have to get a HDMI switch, and then I'm going to have to get some way to connect to the to the Raspberry Pi. And then IR might be the best way to go to be able to just kind of connect everything together. And I was looking around. They have switches, HDMI switches that have some sort of a remote to them. If I can figure out one remote to do everything for the bedroom, that would rock. Including the switch, that would rock.
I'd recommend looking into one of the, I mean, you don't have to go whole hog on a Harmony. Like say, you can go with the $80 model and it works. You can do multiple devices. I mean, you can do up to four devices, you know, with different menu options.
My question would be, and this where I kind of stalled on my whole thought process, was the trying to use the TiVo with it. Whether I actually, you know what, come to think of it, it's all basic. It's all pretty basic stuff. Just, you know, a pointer to move everything around. And then there's no real special buttons to it besides the live TV button also works to be able to switch because I have the tuner card in there. I can record two things at the same time and switch back and forth, which, by the way, is also one of the really cool things that I was thinking about with the Myth TV, because we were talking before. I believe you were saying that you can record multiple things on it at the same time, right?
Right. Altogether, I have 1, 2, 3, plus 4. I have 7 tuners on two. I mean, this is split between two different Myth TV. I got a master back end and I got a secondary back end. And so I have 7 tuners between the two systems. So I can watch live TV and actually be recording 6 programs while watching live TV. Or I could be recording 7 shows and not watching any TV.
And that, in my opinion, is awesome, because with TiVo, with only the two, a lot of times you'll hit that you want to record something and it'll say this will overlap with that and that will overlap with this. And even, you know, even now with being able to record two, that starts to get annoying after a while. If I can set up a system where I can record, like you said, 6 or 7 at the same time, that ain't bad.
Yep, and it's all free, except for your hardware.
Yeah, the hardware being the big price, and then just the time to get it all set up.
Well, Honky, we're coming up on an hour and a half recording here. I think maybe we better give our listeners a break from hearing us ramble on.
All righty. It sounds good.
You better save something for another show.
Lord knows I like to ramble.
Well, any parting thoughts?
No, I think we've pretty much covered everything. I just want to say to those who are listening that if you get a chance, join in on the New Year's Eve 24-hour podcast. I joined in last year, and I only joined in a few times, but I sat there, and I know I listened to a lot of it, and it's a really fun time. If you get a chance, even just to log on for a minute and listen to some of it or download it when it all comes out, it's really great.
I agree. And with that, I think we'll call this a wrap, and we'll, if there's anybody that'd like to hear, you know, us talk about some more specific topics to make, you know, a dedicated show to a specific topic, you can reach me on IRC. I'm Kay Wisher on the IRC channels, and I believe Honky Magoo is Honky Magoo on the IRC channels. So just give us a holler if you'd like to enjoy this show and like us to maybe do something else on a more dedicated subject and just dedicate one show to a specific subject of anything we've spoken of. I know we probably can fill up another hour and a half on each subject we spoke about tonight.
Oh, definitely. I mean, just going through the configuration files for, I know I could probably speak for at least a good 20 minutes or so on configuring Samba. But I know that...
One question I was going to have, I had for you. I forgot to ask while he was talking about Samba. Do you get ingrained granular with your file permissions and shares to where, you know, I don't know how old your kids are, but I got kids old enough that can accidentally delete some files. And we don't, the whole reason I set up the Samba server with Linux was for file permission so that I could lock down, you know, I wanted the kids to be able to see our family pictures, but I didn't want them to be able to, you know, delete anything or open one up and start editing it with something and destroy it. So I've got stuff kind of granularly locked down with, you know, user rights and permissions. Do you get that ingrained with it?
No, but I know I'm going to need to. My daughter's 1 year old, so she's not getting into the computers yet. And my wife, she barely even realizes that it's there. I pretty much just use it. I mean, it's set up on her computer. She can go on to it anytime she wants to, but she, like I said, she's got a thumb drive where she keeps all of her stuff, and she's happy with that. And anything else, she tries to store locally. But even that, she barely stores anything. You know, even myself, I barely store anything locally. I personally just store everything onto the 1.5 terabytes external hard drive that I have Samba shared. You know, anything locally, I figure it's going to get wiped out probably the next time I get ticked off with my operating system and feel like wiping it out and trying something new. So I back up all of that. Oh no, yeah. I don't do any permission. I keep everything just completely open, just because, like I said, nobody else uses it anyway. So.
Well, yeah. If you don't have a need for it, then there's no need to. I mean, it causes more headaches, but you'll eventually find a need for it, I'm sure. Once you get your daughter and maybe any more siblings she has gets older and starts using computers.
Yep.
Well, I think we're going to wrap it up for tonight, and I want to thank everybody for listening to HBR. So that, we're going to say good night.
All right, good night. They can also reach us, like you said, they can reach us on IRC. And the I know I'm in the Linux Basics room, Oddcast Planet, and Podnuts room on Freenode. I'm also on Google+. If you want to hit me up on Google+, that's fine. I don't care who you are. I accept everybody. You can also leave a comment on the HPR site for this. I haven't actually checked the last one we did in a while, but I do check it every once in a while.
Oh, I wasn't aware you could leave comments.
Yeah, I believe comments are open. Like I said, I checked that. There's a little section right underneath where the page is, and right there in the bottom, it leaves a little section where you can leave comments on it.
Well, that opens up for some hate comments then. So everybody, please leave your feedback for us. Let us know how we're doing, and if you want to hear us again.
If you want to hear me mumble on for a little while about this and that and stutter on trying to figure out my words, just let me know.
It can't be as bad as me.
I don't know. I listened to that last one. A couple of times I sat there and went, come on, man, find the right words. It's right there in front of you.
Hey, this is just a prime example for all our listeners. We're not professionals. I mean, you can tell by our the quality of our content, but anybody can do this. If we can do it, anybody can.
And that's the great thing about HPR.
I agree. So thank you for listening, and we're going to sign off for now.
Good night.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HPR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All BinRev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.